Blog Talk Radio.
That is it. It's the man game. That's actually a little late. Welcome back, my friends, to the show where we pretend. Yeah. Welcome to the man cave. I'm Jay Hatter, your host, for the next couple hours or hours or so. With me is Steven76. Hey, Steven.
Hello.
Yeah. Sorry about the smell of paint in here, but we were painting today. I like the color. Not bad, huh?
Yeah, not bad. I put a little Bob Ross over here.
Oh, the happy clouds?
Happy
clouds.
Get
it on the far wall. Happy clouds, happy critters. I had every one of his shows.
Really?
On tape. My mother-in-law recorded them. And being that I was learning how to paint, I used them. Yeah. Do you know he was a Marine, like a Special Force Marine guy?
He was a drill sergeant,
actually.
He was what?
He was a drill sergeant.
That's it. Yeah, of all things. Happy clouds.
Such a quiet man. Happy clouds, yeah. Drop your happy socks.
All right, let me get my... Yeah, I learned how to paint. Be a Bob Ross. Like a bunch of happy clouds, happy critters. First show of the mountain. There's the mountain. All right. Now, let's introduce what we're doing. Yeah, this is at ATOV, a Team of Voices Radio, a Wonderland production with a group of poets that hang out on the air. Part of the biggest writing site on the planet, allpoetry.com. It's free to join. If you're interested, like I said, free to join in the groups, you will find ATOV, a Team of Voices. Knock on the door, Devin will answer and let you in. We have shows most every night of the week, different hosts, different themes, this kind of thing. But Man Cave on Friday, the last Friday of every month, Steven76 and I get together and chat. About what? You don't know. But we will chat. Alright. Alright. Not bad. I like these, have you tried these new chairs, the moon chairs? They're like a form-fitting beanbag chair. You sort of fall into it. Check them out. It's a beanbag chair on steroids. All right, now I gotta keep this area clear. Oh no, really. Mulder. Mulder didn't change, but Scully sure did. Isn't that right? That's right. Scully. Looking good. Okay, tonight on the Man Cave, we're going to be telling some jokes. I'm going to do some magic tricks. Got my magic kit. Okay. that funny? And I got my keyboards up. Got the organ. Check this out. I've been practicing all day. All day. Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
You can feel
it. Not bad. Yeah, that's my Hammond.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do you know, the other day when I was at work, I saw a customer walk by, and, you know, you see the avatar on Sis page. I would have swore this guy was Sinister Spittle walking by me. Yeah. I almost want to say, hey,
who?
Sin.
It was who?
It looked like Sin from All Poetry. It looked like Sinister Spittle.
Oh. Oh, really? Spittle, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I flew from California to Orlando, Florida. I had one trip for a piece of it, and flew out there. And between the classes and the stage presence that we did the award ceremony, you get to hang out at this huge bar. This was I think it was a Disney studio. If they brought you out to Disney World, this is where you're going to stay. Place is absolutely huge. I should have got my room there instead of I was given hotel bed. But I looked down towards the end of this horseshoe bar. Thing is massive. I see a guy wearing a shirt, and I think it says, "I've survived the San Juan Club." Now, the San Juan Club is a tavern that is within probably a par five from where I grew up. I said, "Oh, can't be." You know, this is Florida. So I'm staring at this guy, sure, to see if I can see any information on it. And he catches me staring at him, right? That's an awkward situation. He doesn't know me. I don't know him. So I walk on down to him, and I sit next to him. I go, "Does that shirt say San Juan Club?" He goes, "Yeah, San Juan Club." He goes, "Why? You know it?" And I go, "Yeah." I go, "You got to go to Florida." This guy was, he was on a vacation also. From the same little town I grew up in Florida. Are you kidding me?
Small world, isn't it?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I have this, I had this guy, Bob Shawless was his name. He was 2 years older than me in school. He's sort of a jock, so we knew each other well. And everywhere I would go out of town, he would show up. And I'm talking Giants baseball games out of San Francisco. Bob would be there. We went to Reno. And on the way up, Here's Bob Shawless with a couple other friends that I grew up with on the freeway. So we caravaned up to the MGM. What was another time? We were headed to another doubleheader in San Francisco, and Bob Ross, he was going to somewhere down in Oakland, Berkeley. But everywhere I went, and here's Bob Shawless. It was weird. So I told Steven to bring a joke. It's hot with a good one. We do it till jokes do right. What the hell?
You want one?
Yes.
All right. How about this one?
Okay.
A man walks into a library and orders a hamburger. The librarian says, "This is a library." So the man apologizes and then whispers, "I'd like a hamburger, please."
What?
No?
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Like saying it, I say, can you, yeah, it's like say it, can you say it lower, you know? Say it lower. Lower your voice. No.
You break.
I'm breaking up. Okay, we're doing
it. You're breaking up a little bit.
Really? Let's hold on. Okay, get back to the TV thing. Here we go. Back to the call. There, how's that? Is that better?
That sounds good.
Okay. So those headphones don't work well. I figured they might. Let's pop it off here. Okay. Yeah, I hear better also. So muffled.
There you go. So I can do the joke again. You can hear me.
Yeah, do the joke again. Please, yeah, please. Guy walks in the bar.
Why did the taxi driver get fired? Passengers didn't like it when he went the extra mile.
Okay.
Look at that. I finally got a new screen for my laptop. I got it fired up. Had trouble hooking it up at first because those things, the connections are paper thin. I've got it up, and I've got a whole list of stuff so that the come on. Where are you? There you go. Okay. One of them is labeled a chick named Chuck. Oh, okay. It was the tribute today. Okay. All right. Let me go through here. This is pretty cool. Now I can read that one piece I got. In my drafts, I went through all my drafts, which it seems to be hundreds of them. I went to the very first one.
Yeah.
And put a little word here, a little word there. And, okay. And I finished it. It's not a great poem, but it's a good one. Oh. Poetry. Ultimate. Private browsers. They're very private. Can't get into the damn thing. So what's how's the weather going down in your area of the world? I hear you get the heat. You're expecting the heat wave.
We are, yeah. It's been very comfortable the last few days, and it's supposed to be comfortable through the weekend, but come like Monday and Tuesday, we're going to be shooting up almost to those triple digits, and I'm not looking forward to that. I'm glad I cut the grass today.
Yeah. Oh, don't tell me that. Well, bear with me for a second. Actually, going to make me.
Bear with.
Log in. Yeah, what am I supposed to remember, a password?
I got that Google thing on my Chrome that remembers all my passwords.
Yeah, I've got that too. And look, it worked.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, so I go to, yeah. I didn't post it because it's sort of self-deprecating, you know. Okay, sometimes do. Write a poem. Drafts, thank you. Do my drafts. Okay, now. Okay, I wrote this to the song Hallelujah. And this is where my mind was years ago. Now, you know how the tune goes, right? I lost a pet. I saw you there. Sitting on a barroom chair, you told me that you're the one who cares. Hallelujah. It took me.
Oh.
You, You took me by my loving hand. You said you would wish I'd understand. Now you say that you're a man. Hallelujah. Can't believe that this is true. You could have said, how do you do? I thought about effing you. Hallelujah. I stood upon the straightest line. I should have seen the many signs. I think that's what made me blind. Hallelujah. The simple things that I don't say have stained my private poetry. Please kill me now, I beg of thee. Hallelujah. I bet this verse, I lost the bet. I wrote this for a laugh I'll get. I know it's politically incorrect. Hallelujah. So that's my disclaimer. I thought it was funny. That was like 8 years ago.
That was pretty cool. It made me think of the song Lola, right?
Which one?
Lola.
Oh yeah, L-O-L-E, Lola, the Kinks.
Yep.
Yeah, that's Davies, Jeff Davies, is it? What's it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Okay. No, this one's good enough to maybe. You tell me what you think. I met a clown with nothing left. The tears he could not hide. Gathered were the pieces he kept buried deep inside. Dressed in red striped pajamas and oversized floppy shoes, his whispers spoke of a broken heart and a dancing pain and blues. There were no smiling faces behind his stenciled grin. I watched the sadness slowly traced and roll off his painted chin. The maddening storm was to behold on yesterday's parade. Forgotten were the tales he owned and the clown that died that day, or this day. The life of blinking makeup lights and a rain that never ends, 100 days and 1,000 nights, writing letters that he'd never send. Under the twisted blue balloons, he stood alone that dreaded day. No one came for the broken clown, so he turned and washed away. I looked through his dying eyes, hoping that I might learn the tales of a dying clown, knowing he would not return. Clown. Should have posted. It's got some good lines in it, but one of the reasons I did that is we're gonna have a little segment. I'm not quite sure where yet, but on constructing a poem, how we go about it, and that way they just say, "Well, I took the Stephen and Hatter course, and I haven't won anything." Yeah, okay. We'll just share some points. I mean, do you use a hook line? I think I've asked you that before. You don't depend on a hook line. You go with a subject or a prompt, and you pick off, right?
Pretty much, yeah. What I feel basically like, this week is Shark Week, and I was watching some footage on the great white shark, so I wrote a little brevity about a great white shark.
Awesome.
You get words in my head, and I put them down. That's basically what happens.
No, that's true to how you construct a piece. If you have a prompt, it's sort of you've got it in your head. What this is, a picture, a quote, anything, a song. If you go. Now, when I have the writer's block or I'm having trouble finishing something, that's when I'll try. I always carry a pad of paper and a pencil with me, a pen, and I write down hook lines or ideas. So I do depend on hook lines to a point, like poets and paperbacks. You know, I remember writing that one around that phrase, poets and paperbacks. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, there'll be times when a line will pop into my head, and I will really quick either because I usually always have my phone on me, or like sometimes if I'm at work, I'll rip off a little piece of butcher paper and write it down, or something like that. Or I've even written it on napkins at a restaurant before if a line, or sometimes I've even written a whole poem on napkins.
Yeah.
Or is there one poem in the room? Toilet
and you
paper.
You need to do that. Yeah. Toilet paper. You know, when how many times you go, well, I can remember that. I'll tell you, Tom, I can remember that. No, you can't.
Right. No. Yeah. It disappears. It disappears too quick. Kay sometimes will laugh. If she can't sleep, she'll sit out in the living room, which is right outside the master bedroom. And she says sometimes she'll see me just pop up out of sleep, and I'll grab my tablet and write something really quick and then go back to sleep. It just gets there.
Yeah, and that's when the brilliant ideas come, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the TV show that we've been watching is called As Time Goes By with Dame Judi Dench, isn't it? It's a comedy. It's a British comedy. And sometimes they'll use a word, and I'll be like, ooh, you know, I like that word. Yeah. I'll look and see what it means, and I'll write that down in my drafts, too. I got one draft with nothing but words that I've learned from these British comedies that Kay's been having me watch, and sooner or later they'll find their ways into a poem.
Yeah, there's a certain amount that you absorb your subconscious while you're sleeping in a sleeping state, whether it's sleep or a deep sleep, or I'm not sure when any outside noise can affect you. Not affect you, but control your dreams to a point.
I have proof of that. Well, not physical proof, but I do know that for a fact, because I used to work at the Home Depot years ago, and when you're driving around on the tow motors in the store, they make that beeping noise like a backup. Like a truck backing up noise, the beeping.
Beep, beep, beep. Yeah.
And I had an alarm clock that made that same noise, and the one morning I was just dreaming that I was on the tow motor while the alarm was going off.
I remember, same type of thing when I got on with the fire department. Now, I was applying for a 911 dispatcher, and I had never studied so hard in my life for a job that I did this job. For example, there was a first week of testing, there was over 380 people that came to apply, applicants. I'm looking at these guys are in suits, they've got degrees, they, I don't have a flipping chance. And I bug these guys every day to get me a job. And they sent me out to over 380 freaking people. And I go, oh, man, all I can do is my best, right?
Yeah.
So another weekend of testing. And the following week, following a couple of days, were psychological evaluations, this kind of thing, which is like 900 questions, stupid questions. So anyway, they're hiring the first 15 people. Everybody knows that, the 15 slots. So I'm waiting patiently, within a week, I get a letter. Congratulations, you have tested number 16. I go, you're kidding me. You are flipping kidding me. 16. I went, 16. They're hiring 15. So my mind just going, no, man, this is not, it's par for the road, my life. It's number 16 out of 15. And what I was most proud of was it was 16 out of 380 applicants.
Right,
and
yeah.
There's a certain amount of street smarts that highly educated people that books don't have, which
true.
You need, and they were looking for that. That's how That's how I, and I know those other people that were in that 15 got their job because they're not the smartest characters, but they are very street smart. And so I'm being bummed. I can't believe it. Go on. Anytime that something like that happened, my dad and I would go down to the Berkeley and go out salmon fishing out of the Pacific Ocean, which we did. Never mentioned, number 16. I hate that number, by the way. And then I get this note. Then I get this letter about 2 weeks later. It says, well, we want to welcome you to come down and go through the process of being hired. I had not thought of the first person that washed out would be replaced by the next one in line.
So I
went from happy, happy, joy, joy to a big depression, how I missed a great job, to back happy, happy, joy, joy right out of the blue. So back to studying, right? And it's pretty intense what they expect you to pick up after the testing. And hold on, my glasses fell off. I forget the reason I'm freaking telling this story. Oh, your job at Home Depot, and okay. So I've got 911 on the brain, right? I have I made myself flashcards on any scenario. Call in. I know what to say, what they expect you to say, and what the information I'm supposed to get. For weeks, I would wake up. You're supposed to, when you answer the phone, you says 911. What's your emergency? So during the middle of the night, my wife would say, you'd pop up and you go 911. What's your emergency? Because of my brain. I mean, after years of that, I hate the phone. I hate the phone. I got pretty good at it. I saved 11 lives and delivered 7 babies. Ta-da.
Oh, there you go.
Very short time. And once you go up the ladder and you're dispatching, you no longer answer the phone, so you don't get the life saves. You're on the honor wall. When you were awarded a life save. Some of them were pretty intense. Some of them, you couldn't believe you got the award. You know. I think the babies was the best. The babies were the best. This guy from South Kennedy calls in. And I happen to be answering the phones that morning. And he goes, I'm my wife's having a baby. And I'm not going to make it to the hospital. She says she's in the foyer of the house, right inside the door. I said, okay, I get all the information. I got to calm this guy down. I go, take a breath. We got time. He goes, no, we don't. He goes, I took Lamaze, and I can't remember shit. I can't remember any of it. He says, this is my second baby. I shouldn't remember. I don't remember any of it. Says, calm down, man. So she, the mother, went through it better than he did. Anyway, we get, he delivers twins, which he did not tell me. They knew from the sonogram it was twins. The first one comes out, and I think that's it. Do the, tie off the umbilical cord, and just put it on mom, put it on mom's belly, and it'll be fine. Wrap it up. And says, what about the other one? The other one. So mom delivers, no help from me. I mean, mom delivers the second baby, and the fire department shows up directly after that, not a minute after she gave birth to the second one. And they usually hand the phone to one of the crew that comes in, tells me it's okay, and says I can hang up. I take my first day off. This guy calls and says I need to talk to this guy who helped me through the childbirth. So I come back my days off, and they go, hey, man, you're going to have an interview. They're having a film crew plus this guy from Elk Grove. He happens to work for the Treasury Department out of the capital of Sacramento, Keys Capital of California. He's a T-man. So the first day that I'm there that he can make it up, he brings up the family with the film crew there. So I made the 6 o'clock news, and I didn't really do anything. All I did was calm his ass down. That was the most important part of that call, calm his ass down. But any time you go through that sequence, it's evaluated, and it's declared whether you did a life save, whether you hindered it, whether you can be. And the one thing is, if you go rogue, you go off the cards, the EMS cards, you put your own not only your job, but they can sue your ass. An unfair situation. Yeah, I had 911 with the emergency all over the brain. Yeah, one year of probation. They can get rid of you for no reason. You sign that contract. They don't have to have a reason. If they just don't like you, you didn't do anything wrong. No. Your history. Yeah. So you do this for the first year. Once you've got the first year in your probation period, then you pretty much got a job as long as you show up for work. You pretty much just like tenure. Great job.
Mm-hmm.
Great people. But
I'm thinking of Kokomo.
What's that?
So you're talking about him being in the Treasury office. It made me think of the Untouchables.
Oh. Yeah.
The movie,
yeah.
With Costner and Connery talking to each other.
I think it was Machine Gun Kelly that coined the term T-Man. Don't shoot T-Man. Because that's what they were known for, was the treasury. They were the tax guys that would come around and bust you for the stills. So, it started everything from the Daytona, from the NASCAR, the Daytona 500, to being able to carry guns. That was huge for the FBI and the secrecy and the team in the Treasury Department. They really glamorized Elliot Ness, and I think it's the other guy, but Elliot Ness. Now, what Hoover did, and I don't know what president it was, that in order to fight or fight the crime, you're talking Capone, Machine Gun Kelly, Jack Diamond, Ma Barker, and so some of these big gangsters. In order to beat them, you had to hire somebody that was just as bad, and that's what Elliot Ness was. He was as bad as any of those gangsters, and they shot and asked questions later. And then when the gangsters got all put away and pretty much handled, then you had Elliot Ness to deal with.
Yeah, I had actually heard about that, but he wasn't quite the hero that they portray him as in the television show or the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, he was as bad as any of the gangsters that he arrested, that he took out.
Yeah.
There's another guy that they propped up. I can't remember his name. Dale Robertson played him. Sort of an Elliot Ness guy. That weird name, I think of it. But yeah, they glamorized to be a key man. The movie the FBI story with Jimmy Stewart. They were, that was all about espionage and spying and the communists in America, but they weren't allowed to carry guns. And when Congress allowed them, it was huge. And you'd be surprised at how late in the crime fight that it was. I mean, it was like the 40s.
Is it Jim Hardy?
No, not Hardy. He's, it starts with an E. Like Elmer Gantt. something. There's a TV show.
Yeah, because I got my page on Dale Robertson. If we can find out the name of the show, I could probably bring it up. But
yep. I should tell him. TV movie for TV, made for TV. Shoot. this is
some questions.
Write these things down. Okay. How about another joke? You said you got a page of them. Show me another joke.
All right, hang on a second. Let me see here. He portrayed legendary FBI agent Melvin Purvis.
That's it, Melvin Purvis. Melvin Purvis. Yeah, it starts with an E. Melvin. Melvin Purvis. Yeah, glorified. My dad was he worked in the Secret Service, the FBI. Anything, bank robberies that went interstate over state lines, my dad sort of headed one division of that out of the Capitol. So he was very knowledgeable about how well certain stories and programs portrayed real life. It's like Adam 12 was sort of, the cops laughed at Adam 12. Story, my dad said, the police story, which it changed every week. It didn't have one star. They had a group of people that played, stars. He said that was pretty close. But he loved the FBI story because that's when he was a kid growing up. I guess he came out of the Navy and walked right into that job because it was fairly new to write bogus checks to counterfeit. Counterfeits an old tradition, Catherine. But they got real good. People didn't know if it said $100 bill, then there was $100 bill. The paper is what was the trick. So the plates they made in counterfeiting was quite remarkable. I remember my dad coming home on a Friday night. After they did a bust, and the hard hold, what they call hard hold, any evidence was locked up already. So he came home with $250,000 in a briefcase of 20s, and he showed us, and they were all counterfeit. He goes, "Can we touch it?" He goes, "No, you can't touch it." But he showed us how to. He goes, he said it was very good. Counterfeits. We didn't get to feel the paper, but we got to see the fibers. This is a real 20. And look at, there's no fibers in this other one. But so we had this cop mentality in our house. My dad was a cool dude, sort of a dry sense of humor. But he was a Navy guy from Placerville. So he wasn't a farmer, but more of a lumberjack family. And it seemed to me that my mom, who was very religious, devout Catholic, and that's how we were raised, kept him on a leash, big time. When I was old enough to start going on the fishing trips with him, steelhead trips up to Northern California to the Trinity and Klamath Rivers, I could tell the difference. They would get, my dad would gather together Secret Service, FBI agents, even lawyers that worked together out of the Capitol. And as soon as we were about 10, 20 miles out of Sacramento, heading up north on I-5, they turned into a whole different bunch of guys. I mean, I knew all of these friends of my dad's, and they always act like cops, because that's what they are, 24/7. But to get them away from out of their county, these guys were like It was remarkable. I have a good time to get drunk every night. And start off with Bloody Marys in the morning. And see, you guys were just regular guys. When the vacation was over, the holiday was over, we'd come back, get about 10 miles to home, and boy, the face went back on. The badge came back out. It was a remarkable thing to see. Yeah. But I always felt fortunate that my dad had that job. Not that I could drop a name and get out of trouble. That could never happen because he swore he would never do that. If I went to jail, don't call him. But he'd tell me how to avoid jail. He goes, don't think you can run from a cop because you can't outrun a radio. So don't try it. And I never did. Got busted once. I was best man at my buddy's wedding. This is, I'm 20 years old, I think I am. 20 years old, 21. And I had just bought a 69 Chevelle. It was jacked up in back, big fat tires. It was candy apple green with metal with a silver flake in it. It was a beautiful car. It had a 396 rat motor. So we're coming home. It's about 11:30, 12. We're coming home from a rehearsal dinner. And the thoroughfare there was Madison Avenue, and there was no traffic on Madison Avenue at that time when I was a kid. This would have been in 1978. So the groom comes up beside me, and he says, you know, he's egging to race in his little car, and he wants me to drop the hammers and show him what I could do. And I hadn't done that yet. You know, in the back of my mind, I hear my dad's voice. He says, you get a ticket, I'm taking those keys from you. All right, Dad, no, I won't. But on the way home, I'm down Madison Avenue, I decided to drop the hammer and take the flip off. And, man, this car took off. It's the first time I only had it for a couple of weeks. And it takes off, man. And as I fly by the country club, I look down the road, which T's right in front. There he sat. California Highway Patrol. And I'm flying. I'm doing 90-plus flying over that little hill. And I see him. I know he's going to light me up. Of course he is. But I'm going so fast, I hit the light in a turn, the next intersection. I see his lights come over the hill. My light turns green, and I can see it turn yellow right after me. But I pull over. I pull over at the Jim Boy's Tacos right there and waited for the cop. And the cop, the first thing he said is, why didn't you run? Because I would never have caught this car. Because my dad's a cop, and he said, you can't run the radio, and you would never forget this car. You'd find me. And he laughed. And he let me go. He said, am I going to see this hot rod on the road again? No, sir, you're not. Man, this is great. He's going to take my keys. My dad's going to take my keys. God, I just got this. I just worked so hard for this car. And the cop let me go. He let me take it home. That was before they mounted a camera on a cruiser. I think that was the day that good old boys ended.
Yeah.
When the camera went on now they're liable for what they do. I've got to explain why they let me home. Now I wasn't drunk. I don't think he'd let me go if I had been drinking at all. But he appreciated my honesty. He loved the fact that I pulled over and waited for him. I waited till the lights. And that's like, what do you mean? You wouldn't have stopped at that light if I had taken off. You'd have been right on my ass with that 454. That would have been, you know. Probably could have dodged in, but, you know, then I'm going way too fast in a residential, even if so it's late at night, you know, hurt myself, somebody else. But I think that's why he let me go. I had a new job as a lumber job.
I never told my dad
that story.
It made me think of the one time I ran a red light right in front of a cop. It was in the middle of the night, and it was in the town, a few towns over from where we are now. But I wasn't looking. I wasn't paying attention. I was talking to the person in the passenger seat, and he said, you know, he said, you know, look out. And I looked up, and the light had just turned red, and I went right through it, and I looked to the right, and there was a cop stopped at the other, at that intersection as well. And so I just figured, well, all right, I'm just going to pull over and stay right here because he's obviously going to come and get me. And I stopped there on the side of the road, and the cop pulled up. He kind of just rolled slowly past me, but as he went past me, he kind of looked at me and just gave me a nod, and then he kept going. I don't know why he let me off, but he was just very generous.
You knew, and you let him know you knew. It's just like me when I pulled over. You acknowledged it done wrong. Shame on you. That's what I'd say. I mean, that's a... Okay. I'm having troubles here. Trying to get to a certain... I put a app down. This is a new phone. I can't even answer when I'm on the... doing something on the phone and the phone call comes in. I can't. I gotta wait for them to hang up and then call them back. I don't know how to do that. So the phone is smarter than I am. Let's just put it that way. Here we go. All right. Okay. And I don't suppose I have the... I don't. Yeah. None of my files came over. So, I have to get up. What was that? There we go. Well, Stephen, did you want to hear a song? I was going to take a part where we could dissect either a song verse or a poem verse. You know, sort of just what the meaning we get out of it type of thing. We don't have any permission for any other poet to do that, so either one of yours, one of mine, or we could pick a song.
We could do something like that. That's fine. I know you had messaged me about setting a poem aside, so I did. I do have one set aside.
Yeah, that's got heavy metaphors in it.
The first stanza has heavy metaphors. It kind of lightens up after the first stanza, though. I will say that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, here we go. Okay, can you share that? Because I'm right here at the team of voices, waiting. Oh, there it is.
I'm bringing it over right now. And... it's the one I was talking about just a little bit ago.
Okay. Beauty. Okay, got it. Oh, yeah. Dark Week.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is called Beauty and Grace May Disappear, Not a Trace.
Okay.
And it goes like this. Gliding through cockle-covered bane of those who trace the surface of past epochs, maw ajar, exposing daggered rose, filtering salted saline over malted gill slots, gleaming off-white underbelly, dark gray upon her back, baitfish darting hitherto, fearing her lightning-strong attack. Solar rays glimmering through slack tide's calming lie, before the current rips through coral and her muscular tail thrusts to fly. End poem.
Now... That shark, oh, maybe not. Looks like it just pooped. Oh, those are other
fish. What's that?
It looks like he's taking a poop. Okay.
Those are other fish, yeah.
Okay. They look like freaking torpedoes with freaking teeth. Of course, the first part was you would describe the surface of the epithelial, da, 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 da. A jar exposing daggered rose. Yeah, the damn multi-replacing teeth thing. Would that be cool? Most mammals, especially the larger ones, they die because their teeth, their molars can no longer process the food that they need to sustain themselves. Uh, having your teeth, having a replacement teeth would be excellent. Now, what a thing to evolve. Now, when in the process of evolution did some genome or something say we better roll another row of teeth because otherwise we die?
I don't know.
Where's the transition fish that only get half of those teeth,
Right, yeah. I mean, these things, sharks have been around since before the dinosaurs, so I'm not sure that they found anything on the evolution scale that came before the shark.
Yeah. Well, another one is the crocodile, alligator. They survived the asteroid. And now, how do you feel about this reinventing or the resetting of everything on Earth? Cataclysmic event, getting hit by an asteroid or comet, and everything on the face of the Earth just disappears because of the heat or the waves or something. They all go, but some mammal somewhere climbed under a root of some tree and some cave and survived to keep the species, the humanoids, alive. Now they say there's evidence of five resets through history. This explains the gears they find in rock that is over 200,000 years old. How's that gear? There's some evidence that it can expand. It makes sense, doesn't it? Because everything they say goes back to 12,000 years ago. Was the last reset. And that explains the pyramids. The pyramids in the are a lot older than the first spot. The pyramids, I heard that the pyramids are older than Cleopatra's time to present day. They are older than, if you go back from Cleopatra's time, you go back further than Cleopatra to here. So I don't know what year Cleopatra was. She was before Christ. What was it, about 1,000 B.C.? Something like that. So that'd be 3,000 years. So it'd be 3,000 years past. Would be over 6,000 years, the pyramids. And this isn't before recorded time. I mean, this explains the high thought process of whatever was living at the time. Now, you immediately think other humans. Hell, we could have evolved from grasshoppers on a reset. Could have been totally insect. And then it wiped out and just never know. I think it makes sense. Now, to prove one after the other, I don't think you can do. I think you can go back to one reset and do the ice packs. At the time of the reset, the ice on top of most of North America was a mile thick. A mile thick.
Right.
Yes. That's one of those things you can't wrap your head around. You can't. It's like space. When you talk about the light years and hundreds of billions of light years, people can't fathom. They can't process that in their head, how big that really is. They say you can't because we don't. You can try to say, yeah, it's big. That's a big number. That's not far. That's really far. But
yeah.
That's all we could do. We can't. And think about it. We were born. We experience our lives and we die. And you're expected 70, 80 years old, maybe if you're lucky, 100. That's nothing in the scheme of intergalactic birth and dying of solar systems and planets. We got screwed out of it. We should be living a little bit longer so we can see some of these events. The only thing that we had seen is a comet break up and fly into Jupiter. We saw Hale Bopp. And of course the Halley's Comet, and it comes every 76 years.
Yeah. I missed that.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. Did you really?
Yeah,
I don't know when I think in the
2030s.
Well, you know, Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, he was born the year Halley's Comet was in the sky, and he died 76 years later when Halley's Comet was in the sky.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you made me think of there's a show that I watch called The Orville. I don't know if you've heard about it or not, but it's basically, it's made by Seth MacFarlane, the guy who does Family Guy and all that. But it's like Star Trek, only it's also a comedy. And the last episode that I watched, they were dealing with immortals that didn't know how it felt to die. So these immortals were taking over their bodies and putting them in a near-death situation so they could feel what it was like knowing they were about to die. But then they wouldn't let it happen. They would fix it. And at the end of the show, they were all talking about, you know, the ins and outs of immortality and how you know, most of them would say, you know, I wouldn't want to live forever. But Seth MacFarlane said, oh, yeah. Seth MacFarlane's character, he said, oh, yeah, I would. And they said, why would you want that? And he says, because I want to see what happens. I thought that was kind of a cool way to end the show.
Well, it's something that we all will experience. It's something that we all will share, dying. It's feared. It's probably the most feared thing there is. We don't know what happens after. I truly believe with the if you listen to these quantum physics guys, you know, that explore and they try to decipher the beginning of time and space and what it all is and what we are. They say that there's no way we as a species should be alive. There's something created for our experience. The expansion of our brains, whatever triggered that, so we could have, you know, senses. When you know you exist.
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness. Now, they contribute that to when our brain grew a bit. Whatever triggered that, and then the ability to work things out, be able to know, you know, creation of the wheel, to know we had to have fire, stay near the coast because that's where the food, most food is, and there were caves to hide in because we were hunted. We were not the top of the food chain, we were hunted. Now, I think it was Carl Sagan that said that if you took a 12-word sentence and you made a dice with every letter that spelled every one of those words, and you rolled them, you gathered all that and you rolled them, how many rolls would you have to roll before it all spelled in sequence that same sentence? Those are the odds of it. They said those are the odds of us being here without some kind of design we're following, and they don't know why. But the only physicist that I came across that didn't believe was Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
Other than that, Carl Sagan, they all believe that. I think he was, you know, Stephen Hawking, you know, rest his soul. He was like a C student to high school and in college. He was afflicted when he was like 23 years old. It was when was it multiple sclerosis that he had? And it got progressive, it got worse and worse and worse, and pretty soon he's wheelbound, he's chair wheelbound. So he was able to develop his mind and something and it triggered that that he could see beyond, you know, look out of the box. Now, you need to do that when you're a physicist, I guess. But I think he became angry. Angry that he was in this, he was locked in that chair. You know, the robot was. But I truly believe that that spirituality and faith is something that we need to grow up with. You need to have that and teach that to children in school. They need to know it, whether you do it at home, on the vacations from school, or in school. But you can't not teach it, because the way my mom said, the spirituality, if you don't teach it to the kids, the void that it will create will fill with the demons man has fought since the beginning of time.
I just to let you know, I just looked it up. Hawking's had Lou Gehrig's disease.
Lou Gehrig's, ALS. Okay. That's ALS, yeah. Yeah, ALS. Yeah, what a crippling, terrible disease that is. But along with being raised in a house of faith, I have found, I used to give talks for spirituality, self-awareness, how to be happy, how to find happiness. You have everything in the world, but you're not happy, you're going to be miserable. And I would give these, like I said, these talks, anybody that would listen, I would describe how to be happy, how to find happiness. If you were raised in a house of faith in any degree, you could accept what I was going to tell you, or I was going to say to you. People that don't, that were not, and I'm not saying one's better than the other by any means, but there are people that don't understand faith, why it's needed. There's a reason for religion. You can bash it all you want, but there was a reason. Is how you act and treat people on this plane, this existence, will define where you go after this existence. Consciousness is when we leave this shell of a body. That's exactly what it is, but it could go on. And I believe that if you truly believe, you get to carry on. But if you don't, then you won't. That makes sense.
That does make sense. Yeah. I can see that,
and you can do that by just how you treat people. Just a nice, kind person. You don't have to walk into a house of faith if you found that in yourself. I think the time we spend alone and growing up as a young adult is when you become self aware. That's the time on farms, in the woods. Wherever you have it, there's a lot of time. Our grandparents probably spent a lot of time alone. I know mine did. They were on farms. When I was 13 years old, I got shipped to Idaho to a cousin's farm. And talk about isolation. You see people in the morning when you ate, when you came in at noon to eat. Other than that, you've got your own job, your own field, your own animals to care for, and a lot of alone time. Now, this is when you self-reflect, whether it's forced upon you. I thought it was forced upon me. But I think that's what's missing in today's generations. They're staring down at the phone. Yeah, when they're 13 years old, they got a smartphone. They have complete relationships with other people through the phone.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
and I think
it's the direction the world is going. That's the one thing I was thinking of. What Seth MacFarlane said, I want to see what happens. I don't think I want to see what happens the way the world's going. I do have to
know,
Heather. It's been a little over an hour, and I gotta call it a night real quick here.
No problem, man. I'm gonna get back to the studio. Yeah, no problem.
But I will tell you, I'll leave you with this parting thought. Because, you know, you said you wanted to hear another joke.
Yeah.
And I like this one a lot. This one actually made Kay laugh when I told her it earlier, so I have to say it. I couldn't figure out why the baseball kept getting bigger. Then it hit me.
Okay. Of course. 2020. All right, Steven. We will see you next, the last Friday of August.
Yes, sir. That'll be the next Man Cave where we will prove once again that we know things. But I'll also be calling into your show briefly tomorrow night, too.
We appreciate that. Yeah, tomorrow night we'll be talking space. Whatever means to you in any context. That's right. Final Frontier. A.P. Taylor, myself, and Deborah Lee, and Steven 786 will be calling in. With the wind. Bring the wind. Steven
was
fortunate enough to have married the wind. Blows through your hair. Anytime you read the poetry, the wind picks up, you know. So, all right, man. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay, Ben.
All right.
Bye-bye. So, we're past an hour. We are past this hour. Making it back to the studio here. We'll make it back to the studio so I can play a song. Oh, you're still here?
Good night.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I just want to say good night.
Okay. Oh, hey, tell us what's on A Slice of Poetic Life. Your shows. What's coming up?
Oh, tomorrow night is a Sky show, and it's a special edition Storyboards with S. Darkholm. Disney meets Star Trek. You have to message her for a prompt to write to, and it should be a lot of fun geeking out with Sky at 8 p.m. Eastern. And Monday, The Mortuary of Shadows is going to be Edgar Allan Poe with I think it's called The Strange Case of M. Voldemort. It's an interesting story. A short story, quotes from that to write to.
Cool. Let the cow in. All right. I'll be searching for a song. I think I know what I want. All right, Steven. Have a good month. We'll see you tomorrow.
All righty. Take it easy.
Okay, man. And I'm scrolling through to find this song. this is this song is sung by Shinedown, the group Shinedown, which was formed in Florida in 2001. The leader, Alex Smith, they broke apart his band and created a new band around him. These guys are great. Musicians. They sing a song. Shinedown. Boy, I gotta go all the way to the end. And I like the way that sounded. I was looking at any songs about Alice in Wonderland. They do a song called Alice. And I'm running down the hallway. You gotta streamline this file. In excess. Jeff Beck, Jim Croce, Jimmy Buffett, Joe Cocker, John Denver, look at this, Speed Ahead, Motown. I got this ice cream man that refuses to pull down my street, although I live on the damn highway, off the highway. So I hear him coming out of the housing jacket. I run down there with my dollar, you know. I know he saw me that one time. Then he turns left, goes the other way. I can't catch up to him. I'm not going to run after an ice cream truck, although I want to. He's giving me a complex. I just want a freaking missile. Okay, Sam Cooke, Santana, Celine, man, Shinedown, there we go. This is Shinedown. Her name was Alice. Yeah, Alice.
If I had a world of my own, everything would be nonsense. Nothing would be what it is, because everything would be what it isn't.
I invite you to a world where there is no such thing as time, and every creature lends themselves to change your state of mind. And the girl that chased the rabbit, drank the wine and took the pill, has locked herself in limbo to see how it truly feels to stand outside your virtue. No one can ever hurt you, or so they say. Her name is Alice. She climbs into the window, shakes the shadows. Alice. And even though she's dreaming, she knows. Sometimes the curiosity can kill the soul but leave the pain. And every ounce of innocence is left inside the brain. And through the looking glass we see she's faithfully returned. But now off with her head, I fear it is everyone's concern. You see, there's no real ending. It's only
Shine down. Her name was Alice. She climbs through windows and shapes and shadows. Although she's sleeping, she unlocks the meaning for you. I wanted to share one other story. In the 1700s, there was a letter appeared in the major London newspaper complaining that England was being forced to take deported French prisoners. The British were furious and wanted to stop. The French became upset because the uproar implied that England was too good for French prisoners. Both governments became involved and they were on the brink of war before they unraveled it as a hoax. The original letter, learned years later, had been written by Benjamin Franklin, who was spending 6 months in England as an ambassador and was simply bored. Franklin was a cracker, man. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening, being a part. Again, this is the Man Cave, Steven, Tony, Six, and myself, Jay Hatter, get together the last Friday of every month just to talk about stuff. Because we know stuff. We know some things. Let me share that. Deborah, did you happen to be there? Hoping that she had made it back. I guess not. Okay. Well, somebody shut the music off. There it is. Oh. This is a Shine Down Monsters. My monsters are real. I don't know about yours. Mine are real. My monsters are real. Again, thank everybody for listening. Thanks to you, Steven76. Thank you, Deborah. Can't do this without you. And I'm just going to turn the music up a little bit. Sign off. This is Jay out of California. Signing off. Up. What's going on? Okay. Hoping you can hear me. There's the entrance to the, you know, turn it down. See then. Oh, darn it. Wait for the end. Okay, I don't think it's pulling anymore. I want to read a poem since I got time. I know Deborah's probably going to get mad. I took a verse and made it worse. It goes like this. That day it came to came a rain that hid the tears that fell. Cloudy skies that watched me cry knew me, oh, too well. Stepping back to view the past, I found myself times two. Voices heard in the spoken word, I imagined it was you. Remember when the world was close and nothing was too far away? I took a verse and made it worse, and it remains that way today. Search to find a lasting rhyme and tell me what you see. Words in puzzled ending rhyme. Dreams of being free. Thank you, everybody, again, for listening. We'll be on the demand. Deborah, thanks, sister. Love you. And good night, everybody.